Go in many grocery stores today, and it's easy to believe that fruit and vegetables look a certain way, that tomatoes are always red and perfectly shaped, or that carrots are long and orange, or that eggplants are black and fat. But when you grow your own food, you'll see that there's a lot of different varieties of vegetables out there, and the tomatoes, carrots, eggplants, and all the rest of those vegetables and fruits come in all different colors and sizes and shapes, and often, the strangest looking ones end up tasting the best. That's why we're so delighted today, because today I'm sitting with Chris McLaughlin, who is an expert on heirloom seeds. And as you'll find today, many of these heirloom seeds and varieties reveal a lot about our past and offer us a lot of great options in the garden that we may not have thought about. So, Chris, thank you very much for joining us today.
You're welcome. I'm so excited to be here. This is terrific.
And I should mention that Chris is the author of The Complete Idiot's Guide to Composting, which will be coming out in May 2010. And she is also the author of The Complete Idiot's Guide to Heirloom Vegetables, which will be coming out in December 2010. Well, why don't we start right off, Chris, and what is an heirloom? You know, there's a lot of different definitions out there. How do you define an heirloom?
Well, you know, there are a lot of different definitions. And I think that, for me, I think that anything that has been brought down when you have an open pollinated variety, they would usually be created, say, five generations down, generations of the plant, not necessarily humans. And once they're established and they're very stable and they keep creating exactly the same as their parents, that is sort of a solid, you know, heirloom variety. A lot of the Puritans who are really, you know, passionate about what they do, they really prefer to think of them as plants that are 50 years old or more. Some of them really love hearing the rich stories behind them. And if they have a story, that makes them an heirloom, a family history. I really think that once an open pollinated variety is established, I really put that right in there because they are not hybrids at that point. They are, you know, themselves, and they create pure seed that will look exactly like their parents.
Right.
So I put them all together.
That's a very good point. So whether you think they have to be 50 years old or whatever, the most important point about an heirloom, folks, is that these are open pollinated plants with seeds that are going to reproduce true to type. And that's different from a hybrid, isn't it, Chris?
Yes, hybrids. Normally, why they started creating the hybrids is they would take something that they found, maybe a plant they wanted bigger tomatoes. Tomatoes seem to be the people's favorite. So if you take a tomato that perhaps was something that was a land race, and a land race was an open pollinated variety that grew well in a specific zone, and they took it somewhere else and they found that it wasn't growing as well. So they would take another plant, another tomato plant that was growing really well in the area, and they would cross those together, creating this hybrid variety. What ends up happening is the seed, you can eat those tomatoes, they come out fantastic, they might taste good or grow well or even fight disease, but the seed inside will not reproduce that parent plant. The tomato that you're eating, if you were to keep that seed and regrow it, you would not get that same tomato. You would get a throwback from something else. So it's a very unstable, what they call as instability as far as growing, you know, these plants. And so, you know, you can't save your seed and regrow the same ones, which is, you know, kind of a problem. And in fact, some of these seed companies won't even tell you really what they used to create a wonderful hybrid variety, because it's sort of their little patent trade secret.
Sure.
So anyway, you'd have to guess at that.
And so that's of course a disadvantage, that you can't save the seeds and have it reproduce exactly. But when you look at, for example, tomatoes, many of those hybrids that we have higher resistance to certain diseases. So many times hybrids may offer features that are attractive, like maybe they're a little smaller than the norm, or maybe they have better disease resistance. So wouldn't you agree, Chris, that there are also advantages to hybrids, even though seed saving and being able to keep the same seeds for generations isn't possible.
I think definitely hybrids have their place. And the interesting thing about the hybrids is that they have made them very disease resistant and therefore easy to grow in certain areas, or I should say in a wider variety of areas. With some of the hybrids, when you do get something that has been grown, say in one area, say the San Francisco Bay Area, predominantly, that plant has evolved to defend itself against things. So that plant will grow well there. But then I send some to you, that the same seed, and it doesn't do well. Maybe verticillium wilt or something takes it over very easily. And the hybrid varieties, they can grow in all these different areas, and no matter where they are, tend to do well and defend themselves well against these things. So they're sometimes, I don't want to say easier to grow, but more widely adaptable in a lot of ways.
Interesting.
I mean, but it's, it's a give and take, and it's fun to have both, really.
And, one of the best things I think about the heirlooms is that these heirlooms, as you mentioned, have a great deal of history, and they also offer a much larger variety of different foods than we see in our grocery store. And so I think that they really help in many ways to keep the diversity of our food heritage alive. And I'm sure in your research you've seen that as well, that the importance of protecting these old hybrids. I can give you a perfect example. I just ordered a number of seeds from my garden, and you know, as seasonal wisdom, I love all the historic aspects of plants. So, for example, some of the ones I'm growing are St. Valery carrots, which are from at least 1885, and they are a wonderful red-orange carrot that stores very well. And I just found a wonderful radish seed from rareseeds.com, which is called the Helios radish. And these are bright yellow olive-shaped radishes, which, believe it or not, Chris, they're from the Slovakian city, very close to the village where my grandfather was from. So I said, I have to get these.
Oh, that's so cool.
So I think...
You have to.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think, haven't you found in your research that many of these, for example, how has our food diversity changed and disappeared over recent decades?
Well, you know, I don't know. I did some research on trying to find out just how long it took for these things to disappear. I didn't get a definitive number. But what I have learned from, the professional plant breeders out there is that we've lost about 90% of our diversity already.
Wow.
That's gone.
Wow.
And it can't be brought back. But what's interesting to note about keeping some of this diversity, I think this is so kind of fascinating, it's a little bit tongue-in-cheek, is that when they go to take the hybrids, and let's say they're looking for some great thing, they're looking for a great flavor that they need to add to maybe a plant they already have that does well, or even something that is disease-resistant, because these plants do evolve to become resistant to certain things in certain areas, or maybe, you know, another pest. They actually take the genetic code from the heirlooms that they're actually sort of, they're not touting the heirlooms, and yet they're taking their genetic code and putting them into the hybrid plants, and they're creating the hybrids from these heirlooms. So it's interesting how we do need to keep those heirlooms around. We need their genetic code. We need the diversity. And just like we saw with the grape, the table famine, how literally they planted in Ireland all the same potato, exactly the same thing, and when a disease came along, it wiped out every last one. Nothing was spared.
That's a very good point.
So sad. Yeah, and sadly enough, 1 million people died from starvation.
Well, I think, as you said,
very interesting.
You know, the whole idea of having one variety and the fact that 90% of our food diversity has disappeared is major. And so I think oftentimes I would really encourage our listeners to grab a couple of these seed catalogs that specialize in the heirlooms and the rare seeds. And we can list a number of them on our podcast page for you to find. Because when you start to look at the histories behind these and you recognize the attributes of these different foods and the fact that you can keep the seeds and continue to grow these plants over and over and over again, as people have done for generations, it just seems a shame right. not to include some of them in your garden. Now, Chris, what are some of your favorite stories about? Could you give me one or two stories that you like about certain varieties?
Sure. One of them isn't as much of a story, but I do love how they arrived to our country, which is so fascinating. How, you know, they often did not want these seeds leaving the country or escaping customs and stuff. They didn't want to have to clear anything. And the women would sew the seeds in the hems of their dresses.
Wow.
In order to bring them here. And also, I also heard recently that they would also stick them inside stamps. Ooh. And mail letters to America. And then you'd be able to stamp off and find a seed and we could grow them here. But one of my favorite stories, I think, is of mortgage lifter. I think a lot of people have heard this story, but I just think it's fascinating. The mortgage lifter tomato, where a gentleman who was a radiator guy, he fixed radiators for a living, and he had, I think it was, oh, now I don't, of course, remember. I think it was a $6,000 mortgage on his home. My gosh, like I wish. Yeah. And anyway, he was doing very badly. And it was during a time where the country was, you know, depressed. And he had to find a way to make a little extra money. And he did garden, but he was not a big plant person, per se. Mm-hmm. He just decided to build this tomato. So he started practicing with this tomato, and he eventually built this very large, wonderful tomato. And it was just his, and they called it Radiator Charlie's. And he sold them, and people came from all over. They loved this tomato. They went crazy. And he was able to pay off his $6,000 mortgage with this tomato plant, this radiator guy built and sold on the side, and of course it became mortgage lifter.
Exactly, and it's very famous one too. Did you ever hear of the Lazy Housewife? This is the Lazy Housewife was the first completely stringless bean that was introduced around 1810, and you know, obviously it was a little discourteous to women everywhere, but it's one of the oldest documented beans, and it's very productive, and basically it was a very easy bean for women to collect. So if you were lazy, you didn't have to string them. You could pick them easily, and it produced a lot. There you go.
Isn't that great? And I don't know if you heard of that. This isn't actually a vegetable. It's a flower, but the outhouse hollyhock.
Oh.
I love this story. Do you know that one?
Isn't that where that, wouldn't that tell you where the outhouse was? The hollyhocks?
Exactly. Back in the day, a woman did not want to walk into someone's home and say, I'm sorry, I need to use the bathroom. So they did not want to ask where that outhouse was. So of course, to be courteous to women with their sensitivities, they would grow these hollyhocks out so the woman looked outside and knew exactly where they were. So these stories are fantastic.
Exactly.
Some of the great fun.
They are, and they really are. And the fact that they often offer different types of tastes. For example, I just am trying a new carrot. It's called Tanda de Paris carrot. And it's a 19th century Parisian heirloom carrot that's 1 to 2 inches in size, and it's completely round or round in shape. So that was that's also known, I think it's French Market was another name. So once you start getting into heirlooms, folks, you will love it. Whether you're growing the purple potted pole beans that are beautifully purple, or dragon's tongue, which is spotted. There's so many wonderful vegetables and fruits out there. Wouldn't you say, Chris?
Yeah, and with the carrot you mentioned, I'm actually growing those this year myself.
Which is ideal for different soil climates.
Yeah, exactly. And especially, in a lot of areas, I know that I'm in Northern California, and maybe not every single microclimate clearly has the same, but we have a lot of clay. And a lot of people's soils are not real loamy yet, or, you know, maybe they don't have time to work on it, or, you know, hasn't gotten there. And they can absolutely grow these delicious carrots, and they're nice and round and ball-shaped, which is, you know, really exciting and different on the dinner table. And they're able to grow them and not worry about growing the long, tapered root ones and stuff. With these heirlooms, there's so much diversity, and the colors
Oh, I love.
Brilliant.
And the taste, and also, you guys,
Oh,
for
yeah.
those of you in the northern climates, look at those varieties carefully, because sometimes if you have trouble growing eggplants, for example, there may be a variety that is ripe from transplant in 50 to 60 days, which would be perfect for those of you in northern short growing climates. So
Exactly.
there's something out there
Yes.
for everybody. Now, Chris, we really appreciate your time here, and I just wondered if there was anything that you had come across in your book research that surprised you the most about heirloom seeds. Was there anything that came to mind?
The only thing that I was very, it made me really excited was I found it very interesting. Just, I've always grown heirlooms because I love the flavor. I love how different they look. They've just been great fun. But I started to figure out that people are very, very passionate about them, and they did have these family stories. And I loved hearing it, and I was surprised at how, devoted they were to growing these. And it made me just have a new appreciation about the diversity and what that really means as far as genetic code, because lots of times you skip over that, because you're thinking, oh, that's all scientific and stuff. But it's real basic. It's, just like people and animals, and the more diversity, the better. It's just sort of a basic thing. And it really keeps things, it keeps things the best, to have the diversity of everything. And I was surprised to see just how much we really needed that. So
Good,
I've
good.
enjoyed learning.
That's a good point. I tell everybody, remember that in your own gardens. Plant lots of diversity. Monocultures are not very good situations because they create environments where you're more likely to suffer from diseases and pests. So diversity is very important, as well as genetic diversity, as Chris was just mentioning. So Chris, we are so delighted you could come in, and we hope that you'll be posting lots of pictures of the beautiful heirloom vegetables that you'll be growing in your own garden. And thank you so much for joining us today. We've really enjoyed having you.
Thank you so much for having me. I love this topic, and it was great talking with you.